Good afternoon and welcome. This is Mike Harris, broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also broadcasting on www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Thursday, February 4th, 2016, and my guest today is my longtime friend from Maricopa, Arizona, Harry Hughes. Harry, how are you?
Good afternoon, Mike, and we're doing well down here in Arizona.
So what's going on down there on the border? It's still the favorable time of year. Most of the marijuana crop should have been harvested by now. What are you seeing down there?
Well, the big loads that we used to see down here where the trucks were like overloaded with dope have diminished. And a lot of our drug mules now are opting to take three or four bundles in the back of their car, and they're less conspicuous looking. The bulk of our arrests occur during routine traffic stops where they give themselves away. We had one 2 days ago here, about 5 miles from my house, and there were three subjects in the car. They were all kind of shifty and they're nervous, and they actually consented to a search, and the deputy opened the trunk and found packaging materials and marijuana, and of course a couple of the people were dressed up in camouflage, so you know their smuggling days are over for a little while. And that's essentially what's going on here. They're not putting all their eggs in one basket like they used to. It's the game is changing. I also noticed that they're trying to go back towards Texas again and push things across the border over there. Of course, they're deciding to cut the aerial surveillance by 50% over that section of the border.
Well, there's a lot going on there. You know, I got an email from Numbers USA saying that Obama has ordered the Border Patrol to stand down and not arrest, illegals anymore. It's kind of an insane thing that's going on down there. It's just kind of nuts.
Oh, it is. And I'm not so much worried about apprehending these guys out in the desert. I try to push them back and slow them down and trip them up, because I know even if they are taken into custody, they're not going to stay there very long.
Well, that's just it. It's a revolving door, you know. It's they go in one door, they go out the other. They might have a 2 or 3 day delay in there, but they're kicked out and they're ordered to return at a court date on their own recognizance. But what Obama's telling him is just don't even arrest him, don't even give him a court date. This you know, doesn't he as the president of the United States have the obligation, have the sacred duty of enforcing the laws we have on the books? I just don't understand why any of this is happening. It's a puzzlement to me.
Well, it is, and it shouldn't be happening. Again, if any of us citizens step out of line, well, we're done.
They can't whack us hard enough. I mean, right. You know, honest to goodness, if they're going to hit us, they hit us hard. I mean, you know, God forbid, you know, anything, any slight violation of even minor laws. And I'm not an advocate for drunk driving or anything. I don't do it myself. But, those are just severe penalties for what are normally good, upstanding citizens. I was talking to a young woman the other day, 26, 27 years old. She had she made the mistake of she had one cocktail after she got off of her shift at the restaurant, one cocktail. And she told the officer that he asked her, "Have you had anything to drink?" "Yes, I had one cocktail." She blew a .04, half the legal limit, and she still got the DUI conviction. How does this happen? I mean, it just, you know, it's half of what it should have been. 0.08 is the limit, and yet they can't do enough to screw with the lives of law abiding, you know, primarily white citizens, but these illegals and these others, they could care less what they do. They come up here and you know, the rules don't apply to them. It just seems.
No, they don't. They seem to have no rules at all. It's like, come as you are, do as you please. If you get caught, we'll just kind of let the back door open and look the other way.
Well, Harry, you know, these are the kind of things. I mean, you know, I know you carry a cig, I carry a cig, and that's why. You know, I carry the .45, you carry the 9mm, because you know what? you don't know when you're going to be in a situation, and these people don't follow the rules. And they're very prone to violence. And if some guy pulls out a firearm or a knife or something on me, a baseball bat, a big stick, whatever, I am not going to hesitate. He's going down. Don't turn your aggression onto me. Don't turn onto my loved ones, and you'll be okay. But as soon as you do, it's a whole different ball game. So anyway, I wanted you on the show because we got the anniversary of JT Reddy's death coming up here. Was it May? Was that the time?
May 2nd,
2012. And there's already some publicity coming out in advance of his death. This rag called New Times of Phoenix. It's part of a larger, it's a nationwide chain. Really what they do is they peddle pornography, almost pedophilia, because they advertise for underage, really prostitutes, massage therapists, whatever you want to call them, and all that. And yet they're on a rampage again about a man who was, trying to serve his country, trying to be elected to a public office of sheriff of Pinal County. And yet they're on a rampage and they're out painting him up as being some kind of Nazi and all those type of things. What's going on with that? What's your opinion?
Well, it's just part of the routine anymore. Now I'm pretty disappointed in how things are being classified. Everybody's a Nazi these days. If you're not part of the liberal establishment, you're a Nazi. So, I've pretty much dismissed the term altogether simply because it is a derogatory term. It's the other N-word. it's what it's become. And it was never meant, the European National Socialists didn't call themselves Nazis. It was a bad name, and it still is.
Well, it is. And, the reporter who wrote that article asked me one day if I was a Nazi. And I told him, I said, Steve, I would make a pimple on a real Nazi's ass. Get out of my face. he didn't know how to handle that.
Well, again, apparently Mr. Lebens was a once food critic, gained too much weight, so he became a blogger for the Phoenix New Times, and he's down to maybe two posts a week. That's all he does. And his two favorite targets are, decaying horses in the desert and Sheriff Joe Arpaio.
Well, he lost one of his best targets when JT got murdered. And, you and I know JT, and, you and I were in contact with him during his time of his assassination and the murder of his entire family. I'm not going to justify it and call it the murder-suicide as they claim, because it wasn't. We're talking some really bad, intentionally bad police work where eyewitnesses saw two carloads of shooters leaving the scene. None of this ever got investigated. It just got swept under the rug so fast. And, the position that I've come to, and I've talked this over with Gordon Duff and others, it appears that the Gilbert police were involved, and they were acting as the hit squad to take him and his family out. Don't have any proof of this. If I did, we'd be actively using it. But it baffles me that here we are all these years later, and they're trying to still disparage this man's good name. And they're trying to create a villain out of a guy who's been dead and in the ground now for 4 years. I mean, when's enough enough?
Oh, it's not. And so they've been waiting for all this time for these documents to be released. And there's even more of them. I believe, according to the article, it was going to take up to 6 years to get all the documents in order. So we opted for the other plan, which only took 4 years. And in that pile of documents was when I was on JT Sheriff's election committee, I eventually resigned from the election committee, and they had that letter in there. And of course they had documents from a subsequent DPS investigation and some other investigations. Somebody on the New Times way back, I think going to 2010, made some stray comment about white guys in camouflage shooting immigrants in the desert. And that prompted people to start looking and investigating and, you know, under the suspicion of domestic terrorism and all this other stuff, just because of some stray comment on a blog at a liberal fish wrap of all things. And it was ridiculous because 99% of the time when a Mexican is shot in the desert, it's because another Mexican did the shooting. We call those guys rip crews. And, you know, it's a cutthroat dog eat dog kind of business, but that's who's doing the killing down here. It's Mexicans. And, you know, here we go. We got some white fella up here.
It's the same phenomena that we see in Chicago when you've got, you know, we had 900 murders last year. In Chicago, it's black-on-black violence. Down the border, it's Mexican-on-Mexican violence. It's the same cause. It's true. It's not – guns are what's used, but if guns didn't exist, they'd be using axes or hammers or something else to you know, take each other out with. But what they're fighting over is drug territory and drug turf in order to make the money to be profitable. And it's the same thing anytime you hear the canard of it's gun violence. It's not gun violence, folks. It's drug violence. It's about drugs. And that's why, you know, I look at Sean Penn, the interview that he did with El Chapo. And I look at that, and, you know, Sean Penn's interview on 60 Minutes was brilliant because he goes, look, this drug policy in this country is a disaster. It's a disaster. And it's time that it's reevaluated. And it's time that we do something that works. The drug policies we have in this country are set up to allow the cartels a monopoly and a price premium because of illegality, et cetera. It's just how things are, and it's really too sad. It just is what it is. You know, I mean, how do we get these dumbass politicians that we've got who are running? Nobody's even talking about this. This is a major issue. And I tell you what, if Trump got his act together, he'd be talking about this issue too. Because you know what? He'd peel a lot of black votes away because there's a lot of men and women out in this country of all ages, all colors, who've done time for minor drug infractions, who would support him as president to get these things reversed and get them expunged. I mean, for instance, every marijuana arrest, take it off the books. You know, undo it. Undo it. Legalize the stuff like they have in Oregon and Washington State, Colorado, and there's another, you know, a dozen and a half states who are thinking about legalizing it.
Right. We should do something like that. Here in Arizona, any usable amount of marijuana, we're talking a few seeds and stems, it's a class 4 felony here. Other states, you're essentially written a citation and you're on your way. There's no uniformity in this country. Of course, a lot of it has to do with all these private prisons, and even the non-private prisons revolve around money. So, you know, these are relatively low level risk type people they bring into these institutions, and that's what it's all about. They're cashing in on this end of the drug war as well. You know, there's two ends of it. There's the front end and the back end. The front end's where the money launderers and the drug dealers make their money. And then there's the back end where the corrections industry makes their money.
Well, you just hit something on the head, because the profile of a small-time drug user, like you said, a few stems and seeds, you know, half of a joint, something like that, that's going to be a docile guy in prison. That's not your violent guy. That's not your mass murderer. That's not your psychopath. That's not your thug. That's just some guy, you know, and who better to manage? Who else would they enjoy managing than people who are easy to get along with?
Well, that's it. These guys are nonviolent. They're going to sit around, play cards, and watch TV all day, and that's about it. Also in Arizona, we have a large workforce of inmate labor. I made a trip down to the state capitol one morning, and what do we have? Doing the landscaping, taking care of the sidewalks. It was people from the Department of Corrections. I made a trip to Bisbee. They're restoring an old post office down there. Again, I saw DOC people doing the work. So they are actually undercutting, underbidding contracts in order to create, you know, this low, cheap, this labor is actually cheaper than the Mexicans they hire off the books.
And, you know, the guy who is the lobbyist for the prison, for the private prison industry in there in Arizona is a guy named Chuck Coughlin. You ought to look him up. He's one of these guys, you know, he could use a visit and, you know, ask for some of his time, call and schedule an appointment. But this is a type of guy who promotes this. He became Governor Jan Brewer's, one of her top advisors. And then I found out that he made more money lobbying for the prison industry than he did working directly for the governor. So he became a de facto advisor to her, not truly on the staff. And that's how these kind of slime – this is a slimy deal, folks. It's and that's how these slimy deals work. And, you know, the prison industry generates a lot of money. It's free labor. It's free labor. And they want docile people. So they try to create crimes that docile people commit, and marijuana possession's one. And the other thing, you know, let's go back to JT a minute. One of his platforms in his campaign for sheriff of Pinal County was that he was going to legalize or at least not enforce the marijuana laws and allow anybody to have any amount there, because he didn't believe in the in allowing the cartels that revenue center, that revenue stream.
Yes, that's true. He did not want to actively pursue, you know, these minor possession drug cases because it just wasn't worth the time. We could have saved quite a bit of money not incarcerating these people. And if they needed some sort of help, we should have had some kind of program to wean them off their habit instead of exposing them to, career criminals, which you'll meet when you get locked up. It's a fact that, you know, once you become incarcerated, your odds and probability of going back to a useful member of society actually drop quite a bit because, again, you're being exposed to people who are way far worse than the minor drug user.
Well, you are. And, you know, that's the thing. I've talked to guys who've been in prisons and who've done time. And, you know, really the universal feeling from guys who I've known who've done time is that it's a gladiator academy. You go in, you're just a regular guy, you made a mistake, you don't know how to fight, you don't know how to survive, you come out of there and you're different. And you become a gladiator, fight to the death gladiator in many, many cases. And that's what we're growing. That's what we're doing to these young men and women. And I think it's unfortunate. And you hit the nail on the head. How do you lead a productive life after you've had a felony conviction? Good luck getting a job, doing anything except drying the car at the car wash.
Well, that's hard to get now, too. After all, we have all this other labor out there that works for less. So, you know, a convicted felon is basically condemned to reoffending, and it's 70-some percent of them usually do. You know, it's the system is flawed from the get-go. The methods are wrong, and you know, essentially these prisons are warehouses where, you know, people get to compare notes until their release date. Mm-hmm. They get out, and what do? You know, you check that box on your job application, you run that background check, you can't handle money, you can't vote. Look at all these things you can't do as a felon. And that's just for having marijuana.
Not allowed to own or carry a firearm? I mean, you really lose it when they convict you. And it's a sad state of affairs. And the thing is, if you're in, you go in, you do your time. There ought to be an end line where this is like your credit report, you know. And I hate credit reports, and I hate the FICO score. I hate the whole concept. But you know what? After 7 years, whatever the item is, it falls off.
Right. With a felony, it never does. It's there. It's like you may as well have a brand on the middle of your forehead. Yeah.
You may as well. You may as well. So anyway, let's switch gears a little bit. What do you think? How's the political situation in Arizona? I hear John McCain's got a challenger down there.
He's worried. Like I said, the last time he got reelected, it cost him more than $15 million to hang on to his seat. He has some competition now, and McCain, even among McCain supporters, isn't doing so well. So. He's going to have to fight. And Well,
he's dirty. He's dirty. There's no rule he won't bend or break. I have confidence that he will bend or break any rule if he thinks it'll benefit him and get him reelected. I have confidence that he will. He cannot sink to any greater depths. However deep it needs to go, he'll go there. That's just my opinion of the guy. If you ever want to talk scum of the earth, look at John McGain. It's got his picture right next to the definition in the dictionary.
You know, it just amazes me.
But you know, what do we know about this? I know it's a woman. I think her name is Kay something. I don't recall.
I can't remember her last name, but I like what she's about. And anyone that can give McCain a run for the money is worth looking into. And you know, hopefully, McCain will get bumped off the ballot, and not even be in the general election.
That would be the ideal thing, because I know Kristen Sinema has been positioning herself for a race against McCain on the Democrat side.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Anybody?
Ask me how I know that.
Anybody but McCain at this point. You know, at that point. But
well, the guy's a criminal. He's committed treason. It is my opinion he's committing treason again. The fact that he entered Syria illegally to meet with the jihadis over there with ISIS is a treasonous act to me. And it is my opinion, and only my opinion, but I think that John McCain in his position as chairman of the Armed Services Committee is our de facto commander-in-chief. I think that he has wrested control of the U.S. military away from Obama. It's not overt. It's very covert. It said that you ever seen an org chart where you've got direct lines and dotted lines? I think the Pentagon's got a dotted line going straight to John McCain where they report. That's the best way I can put it. Anyway, let's keep moving here. Let's talk about the presidential election. What do you think about the results out of Iowa?
Well, it didn't come as any surprise how there was all these little, you know, controversies behind, you know, these candidates and how they got to where they're at, the coin tosses, and you know, that little rumor about Ben Carson dropping out, and you know, it's going to be dirty politics from here on out and forever, the way it looks now.
Well, it does. And you know, Ted Cruz, I was never a Ted Cruz fan. You know, I don't fall into that evangelical wing of the party. I just don't go there. Those aren't my people, you know, kind of thing. And but that's who Cruz is with. And how can they be so self-sanctified and support this guy who's a known liar and cheat and would break the rules, break the law like that? All right, we'll be right back in a couple of minutes, folks. More with Harry Hughes right after this short break. Stick with us. Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com. Also broadcasting on www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Thursday, February 4th, 2016. And my guest is my good friend, Harry Hughes. Harry, welcome back. Hello, Harry. Hey, there you are. I hear you making noise.
Okay, yeah. I had the microphone muted there during the break, so.
I do the same thing, and sometimes I forget to turn it off, and I'm talking away, and Brett has to shout, "Mike, turn on your microphone." I've done that, you know, at least 100 times. So I am not the one to throw rocks or to discredit someone for not forgetting to turn their microphone back on. Anyway, let's talk about these clowns. You know, these like I said, you know, Ted Cruz. How can these evangelicals, who are these holier than thou people, come out and support this guy when he's obviously a scofflaw and a lawbreaker? And you know, it's just how it is. I mean, I look at a lot of politicians who break the rules, do anything to get elected. In Arizona, what was his name? Tom Horn. Who is one of the biggest slobs I've ever met. You know, he was the superintendent of public instruction, then ran for attorney general. During the attorney general race, he broke the law. He broke the campaign finance laws by commingling money from his campaign with a outside political organization in order to win the election. He squeaked by, you know, maybe a percent. 5% and a quarter. He barely squeaked by him and beat the Democrat, the woman who was opposing him. And the guy, he was turned in by his own people. The deputy AG for Southern Arizona, a good friend of mine, a guy who was my Pima County chairman when I ran for governor, turned him in. Because he commingled the money, and there's some straight up good people in this, and my friend Don is one of them. Not going to mention his last name; he doesn't need the attention. But you know, when you got guys like Tom Horn, who break the law, and then they just slapped his wrist, didn't do nothing. They should have nullified the election, thrown this schlub out. Here's a guy running for attorney general, and he breaks the law, just to get himself in the office. That type of behavior is despicable. And so I look at Ted Cruz, and I think that's despicable. I look at Hillary Clinton, despicable. These people aren't fit to shine shoes. You know, I mean, they're really not. And this is our ruling political class. What is wrong with us?
Oh, it's horribly wrong. And when you talk about really bad people getting into office, I know somebody that tried to run for Congress back east. And he ran as a conservative Republican. There were several others that wanted in there on the ballot, too. He did everything right. He went out and got the signatures on his ballot petitions. And then he goes and turns them in. All of a sudden, oh, there's something wrong. We're going to challenge this. So he goes back, and he has to go out and verify all these signatures. It comes back. They were all legitimate. So this was just a process to try to discourage this guy from running for office. There was a bunch of these guys in the same boat. And he comes back again, some kind of a procedural thing on the ballot petitions about being uniform. And they're all supposed to be on the same type of paper, same size, your name and position all supposed to be on the petition. It doesn't say nothing about what color ink the signatures should be in. So some were black, some were blue. Well, anyway, they try to contest his legitimate ballot petition signatures on some other technicality. And then at the very end of this, he never got on the ballot. And then they tried to accuse him of voter fraud and said, well, you think you learned your lesson now. We'll just let you off this way and you just get out. But this is how they do it. The established politicians will attempt to weed out anyone with any kind of leadership sense out of the running before they ever get to the primary.
No, I absolutely agree. As you know, I ran for governor and I had all the same obstacles and challenges ahead of me. But I persevered, and I actually made it onto the ballot. I had some other skullduggery that was involved, but I actually made it on the ballot, which was a big deal. I mean, it's an accomplishment. I mean, nobody wants to be an also-ran. I wanted to win because I thought I could make a difference. And, I at least made it on the ballot, and that's something, for governor of the state. There's probably fewer than 1,000 people alive in the country who've ever done that. It's an accomplishment, although nobody knows who I am or what I did. Nobody remembers. Nobody remembers. It's just kind of a funny, funny thing. But they do. They have these senseless, inane rules that they write with their stated objective is to keep it fair so nobody can cheat. Well, they're not there to keep it fair. They're there to keep regular people out of the process because they don't want regular people with common sense. You don't have to have leadership ability. You just have some common sense. The people who can't be corrupted. They don't want people like that in there because that's not where the money is. And politics, folks, is all about money. And if you don't have it, you ain't going to win. It's just how it is. I quote this all the time, but 96% of the time in this country, it's probably higher than 96% of the time now, but at least 96% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins. And that is a sad state of affairs. Not the best guy or woman, not the most capable, not the smartest, not the one with the best program or political agenda, but the one with the most money. It kind of runs contrary to everything that we were ever taught as children. So I think that what we have to do is be careful that we don't teach our children all the wrong things, because I certainly know, reflecting upon my life, I was taught a lot of wrong things. I was taught a lot of things that just didn't make sense, but I was told to do it. Buy that bigger house because you're making more money now. Buy the bigger house because you need a bigger mortgage deduction. You know, I mean, just silly, nonsense things. And you say, well, really, that's what I should do? And your accountant advises you and your tax lawyer advises you to do these stupid things. They didn't say pay it off. They said buy a bigger one so you can get a bigger deduction. You know, all this stuff, all this bad advice, this malinformation we were given in order to lead us down the path and keep us as working wage slaves. And speaking of houses, Harry, any progress at all out of Green Tree or Green Light Financial, whoever it was, about getting your deed and your mortgage on your house?
Well, that never happened, and I don't think Green Tree is even Green Tree anymore. There's somebody else now, so I'm not even sure who to hit up now. It's gotten to the point where it's like, you know, again, there's that dead horse again. We're trying to beat on, and they're not going to give it up.
Well, like I told you, I would file suit against them in small claims court in Maricopa there, and you know, ask you know, that the court award you free and clear title to your property. Well, you know,
I understand. Yeah.
No, that's right, because, you know, if they don't appear, you got a default. You already have it written out. Just take it down to the county recorder. Say, look, here's a court order. Give me the deed to a property. Create one. I paid it off. I'm free and clear. I want my deed. And that I think would be a way to go, and that would get somebody's attention someplace, because I think there's more than just you in the same boat. These guys so screwed up the whole mortgage industry by avoiding the county recorder, trying to save those fees. This whole MERS nightmare is going to come. I had to get Greg Morris back on the radio show again. He's a good guy. I want to see how he is progressing with his lawsuit on that, because this could be another nail in the coffin that takes down the big banks. And folks, we're not going to have any peace in this country until these big banks are dissembled and taken apart. And the stupid thing that happened in the Bush administration during the 2007-2008 financial meltdown is we didn't have to bail these banks out. That was stupid. We got a process in this country. It's called bankruptcy. And you break that big bank into your 10,000 little pieces, and you sell it off to who's ever willing to buy it, and you deconsolidate that power, and you distribute that power across 1,000 different entities, and don't let it concentrate, because we can't afford too big to fails. It's just how it is. You know, we got railroaded. You know, the Bush crime cabal was in on it. They're all there. I mean, we need to break those banks up, and the next time they get in trouble, they need to be bankrupted. And they need to be broken up, and they need to be resold to who's ever got the money to pay a fair market value for whatever their net worth truly is, their market value. And that's the one way to find out what something's really worth is when you go to a distressed asset sale. So anyway, I'm on this one today, I tell you. So what else you got, Harry? You know, we've got a lot ahead of us here this whole political season, and you know, one of the things is I want to reach out to Donald Trump, you know, because so far I look at Trump as being the man among midgets on the Republican side. You know, I see the rest of them as midgets. I mean, Rand Paul had the good sense to finally quit. Rick Santorum is still hanging in there. So's Huckabee. So's these guys. They've been there through the process 3-4 times. Nobody wants them. They're never going to get elected. Go away. What are you wasting everybody's time for? Go away. But my advice to Trump would be, I've got two strategies for him. One would be, if he wants to lock up the Republican nomination before the convention, would be to pull Ben Carson aside. Say, you know, Ben, look, we've had our differences in the past, but you and I are the two outsiders here. I'd like to announce that if I get the nomination, that you will be my running mate. And it would do a couple of things. One, it would draw a lot of the blacks away from the Democrats. You might have a lot more blacks voting in a Republican primary to support Trump so they could get Carson as the VP. That'd be a really good strategy. I think it might work. And I think Carson, you know, is a smart enough guy, could go out and pull it off and go talk to a lot of black constituencies and get them to vote in the Republican primary, help Trump. That's the big thing. The other thing that I look at is if Trump would name a Cruz or a Rubio or a Santorum or any of these guys, he's going to be looking over his shoulder 24 hours a day and hoping and praying that they don't JFK him, because Cruz already is willing to cheat. You think he wouldn't kill his boss to get the top job? I think he would. I don't know. I don't know him. But, you know, any guy who's willing to do that type of unethical things, you've got the two guys out there who are not part of the political establishment. And we need to get fresh blood. We need to get fresh people in there. We need to get new people with new ideas. Not this old, tired Republican stuck in the mud, stupid. I wouldn't give you a warm bucket of spit for the whole rest of them, you know?
Right.
Now, the other strategy I've got for Trump would be if he wins the nomination anyway, and if Sanders gets screwed out of the Democrat side, because Hillary's going to try to screw him out of it. Let's face it. She's going to try to shortchange him the way she tried to shortchange him in Iowa. And if Sanders does not get the nomination, the other thing for Trump to do would be to name Sanders as a running mate and say, look, our goal here is not to fight amongst ourselves. Our goal is to govern and do some good for the American people. And that would completely gut the Democrat camp. They would be in total disarray, and you'd have lifetime Democrats voting on the Republican ticket, which I think would be brilliant.
Yeah, that would really change it up a little bit. But yeah, I'd like to see an outsider for once, because what we've seen over decades is the insiders keep spinning their wheels. They want to say yes to everything and everybody, and I kind of like the idea we have a candidate now. It's not afraid to be rude, not afraid to offend people. A lot of us think a lot of the things that Donald Trump's actually saying, and this hasn't happened in a very long time, probably since the George Wallace days, I think.
Well, and it's not even about that. It's not, George Wallace, they tried to disparage him and run him down as a racist. You know, no, granted, he may have been a segregationist, but so what? You know, everybody was a segregationist back then.
Well, it's coming back.
It needs to. I mean,
the blacks want it. They want their safe spaces now. It's segregation without calling it segregation, but it's exactly what they're asking for now. They're actually, colleges are building dormitories that are going to be exclusively black, and it's like, well, guess what? It's come full circle. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, well, it has, and we'll see where it goes. We have to realize that. Since the murder of JFK, that's really when our country changed. Before that, we had a pretty stable country. We had problems, of course, but we had a pretty stable country, and JFK was trying to solve some of the problems we had. But once they murdered him and got away with it, that was just the beginning of our problems. You look at the radical policy changes that Johnson forced on us, everything from the war on poverty to escalating the Vietnam War, all these things that the American electorate did not support, did not want, were forced upon us. And, how do you deal with this? It's time for regime change. And we need new management in this country. We need new people at every level. We need to throw them out. Everybody from the dog catcher up to the president of the United States, we need new people. We can't stand the people who've been doing things the way they've been doing them for so long, because they've got to be part of the problem, not the solution. It's just it's time to shake the tree. Let's just say that.
I certainly agree. It's time to get some new blood in here and try to fix things, because our current crew that's in there making decisions on our behalf are only doing things to serve themselves, their shareholders, and that's it. For us, we get nothing.
we get nothing. All we do, we get the privilege of keep paying our taxes, and we've got a system that's so crooked that your mortgage company can't even give you the deed to a house you paid for free and clear. Anyway, it's time to clean things up. You know, I mean, it's time to it's time to redo this. Let's just say that it's anyway. Hang on. I have someone's typing to me in the chat on Skype. I have to tell her, look, I can't talk and type at the same time. I got to pay attention to the radio show here. That's far more important. But people want these sidebar dialogues. And me, I don't have bad manners, so I always respond. It's just something that I do. You know, we're brought up to be courteous to people, and even when it's inconvenient for us. And that's a good thing. Anyway, where else you want to go with this, Harry? We got about an hour and 7 minutes left. What else you want to talk about? What else is on your mind?
Well, I've been kind of following the situation up in Oregon for the last month or so, and that's been kind of getting to me a little bit too. I've
been remarkably silent on that, so this might be a good time to bring that up. What's your take? What do you see?
Well, I remember the Occupy movement didn't leave the park after closing hours. A group of Native Americans occupied Alcatraz for several months, and that wasn't any big deal either. And now all of a sudden, have a different crowd of people out here occupying a park, and it has exploded rather violently. Meanwhile, in cities like Baltimore, the police and the federal government just stood back and granted certain kinds of people space to destroy. So I'm kind of puzzled here as to why all of a sudden this has to be done the way it was done.
Well, I saw that video of the FBI aircraft video and stuff, and I'm telling you, I haven't done a frame-by-frame analysis on it. I've not done that. But it looked to me like the guy got out with his hands up. It was trying to surrender himself when they shot him. That's how it looked. Like I said, I haven't done the frame-by-frame analysis, but it kind of looked to me like he was trying to give up. And they say that he reached for his firearm. Well, what's the first thing they tell you when you have your hands up? Drop your weapon.
Yeah. Well,
that's okay. Well, I'll drop it. So he goes to reach for it to drop it, and they shoot him. that's the first thing that they always tell you if you're armed: drop your weapon. And so I kind of look at this and say, this is kind of fishy to me. This doesn't quite make good sense.
Well, what's got me too is that they're calling this a traffic stop. Well,
it was not a traffic stop. There was no traffic. Okay, there was a couple cars on the road, both trying to leave, trying to get out of there, as they have been requested to do. They've been asked to leave. They've been asked to vacate. They're leaving. They're vacating. And they weren't allowed to leave and vacate. They had a roadblock put up for them. What is the difference between a traffic stop and a roadblock? I mean, I don't know what the semantic difference is. Pardon?
I've been in both. There is a difference. I've been in a roadblock situation before. And, it's intended specifically for one group of people.
Drunk drivers.
Well, that's another one, but I've been in
Arizona. That's who it's for.
I was in a roadblock situation, and again, it all ended well. But the roadblock was designed specifically for my vehicle and its occupants. And a traffic stop, when they tell you that on the news, oh, he just got pulled over by the police. Well, what they fail to mention is these guys was all decked up in tactical gear. They had a roadblock on a curve in the road, of all places, out in the middle of nowhere. And, of course, the video they released is just fuzzy enough to make it so that it brings up enough questions so that people will not unite behind any kind of movement for this. So that's part of the reason why I think they so promptly released the video, because it really brings up more questions than it answers anything. And, here's something else that occurred to me. Lavoie Fittickum was a cowboy. He carried a 45 revolver, usually in a holster, on his hip.
Yep, and that's the first thing they tell you is drop your weapon.
Right.
All right, well, let's take this up on the other side of this break. We'll be right back, more with Harry Hughes discussing the Lavoie Fittickum murder, whatever you want to call it. We'll be right back after this. Well, good evening, actually, and welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com as well as www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Thursday, February 4th, 2016. My guest is Harry Hughes, a longtime good friend. Anyway, Harry, welcome back on the show, and I really appreciate when you come on and act as a guest for me, because you know, you and I, we'd have this discussion anyway. We were just hanging around your place, you know.
That's right.
Just how we are.
Just front porch kind of chatter, kind of stuff, you know.
Yep. But anyway, this Lavoie Fittickum issue here, like I said, it gave me the impression that this guy got out of his vehicle, arms raised, to surrender. And like I said, the first thing that cops tell you if you're armed is drop your weapon. It looked like he went to comply and they shot him for complying. That's just what I see. Now, the other thing that I thought about is every police car now has a dash cam. You know, they've all got them.
Yeah, I have a dash cam.
Where are the other views of this incident? How come we haven't seen any of those?
That's a good question, because that would probably give us a little more clarity, but they don't want us to have that. Again, they shot this video, which I honestly think they should have had a better camera in the air, too, considering this is the federal government. I mean, I have a dash camera that shoots better resolution than quite a few of the police cars out there, and you know, they cost less than $100 now, so... I think part of the reason that video was ever released was because it just didn't show enough, and it just raised enough questions to put doubt in people's minds. However, this is a much closer to a hands-up, don't-shoot situation than the Michael Brown case in Ferguson, Missouri.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the guy's hands were clearly raised in the air, and you know, what is he going to do a quick draw against no. You know, 10 or 12 cops? I don't think so. I don't think that was his intention. I think his intention was to disarm himself as quickly as he could, because he had his hands raised in the universal sign of surrender. I give up. That's what it was.
That's what I saw too.
But you know what, this government's not afraid to kill people. You know, I go back to the deadly Waco incident, that they killed, what was it, 83 men, women, and children, burned them alive. That's something this government is not afraid to do. And nobody did anything then, and nobody's going to do anything now. Just the gutless American sheep are going to sit back there and watch the Super Bowl on Sunday.
That's about what it'll amount to. They're going to watch the Super Bowl and... You know, the rest of the world out there will just keep going by as it always has.
And, Yep. You know, and I don't know, how do we fix this? How do we get ourselves into a fair and equitable society? How do we make this thing work so that it works to the benefit of the American people and not to the detriment? Because, you know, what are we supposed to do? Just take what they give us? I mean, it's obvious we have a two-tiered justice system. Like I said, I gave the example of Tom Horn earlier, who was the elected by deceit, by fraud, by violation of campaign finance laws, elected as Attorney General of Arizona. He broke the law. He should have done time, but he got off with a hand slap and a public chastise, and he never ran for anything else again. But here's a guy who should have done time for his offense. Didn't. And here's a guy with his hands raised trying to surrender, and they shoot him down in cold blood. And I tell you, if you saw the sheriff who was on TV that day giving the interview, that sheriff was rattled. he was rattled. He was not, he was beside himself with this. I can see distress on people. And you look at that interview of that, that county sheriff there, that guy was distressed at what had happened.
Well, I suspect he's been looking over his shoulder for a while because he didn't make too many friends during this whole process. No, not at all. And it's, you know, this just really put more gasoline on the fire after this, you know, supposed traffic stop. These guys are going to a meeting in a neighboring town. You know, if they really wanted to take them into custody, they would have waited. And then they could have taken them all, you know, coming in or out of the door one at a time in a much safer environment than trying to stop somebody out alongside the road someplace. You know, of course, they didn't really want any witnesses, I don't think. So that's why happened.
That's what I think is the big deal there, is they didn't want witnesses. And they released that one tape from the aircraft in order to make it confusing enough and say, well, he went for his gun. You know, come on, folks.
Well, they assumed he went for his gun.
Let's use a little common sense here. You know, nobody is fast enough on the draw to outshoot the 8 or 10 cops who already had their weapons pulled and trained on him. No one's that good. No one's that quick. And then this guy was an old geezer. Come on, you know, this is no spring chicken. You know, we're not talking, you know, Billy the Kid here. We're talking an older gentleman. And
knee deep in snow,
and they gunned him down, murdered him. Anyway, that's just my opinion. That's just what I see. And like I said, nothing's going to come of it. You know, they're going to sweep this under the rug. The official story is the official story. There's never going to be anything else. But I think that there is a bigger political calculus here, Harry. And now whenever they gun down that guy in Ferguson, who also had his hands up, but not as clearly as this guy did, now they can say, look, we're an equal opportunity murder. We murder whites and blacks. What are you blacks carrying on about this time?
Yeah, there you go.
You
okay,
know, I mean,
well,
honestly, think about it. I mean,
yeah, they're just they got the chalk up on the board. We got one for them and one for us. Okay, then it's gonna they'll shoot somebody else next. I'm not sure who yet, but yeah. We're an equal opportunity
assassinators. Yeah, assassins. There you go, assassins. That's the right word. But you know, you really look at it, and if you're black, if you're white, it doesn't matter what color you are. If this government feels the need, they will gun you down. It's just kind of how it is. And you know, I watch these things. I see the pushback where some guy walks up to a police car, it empties the magazine into the officer. You know, that's happened as well. Well, do you ever wonder why that's happened? Do you ever wonder why there's so much public anger towards law enforcement? I'll tell you why. Because we've come a long way from Andy of Mayberry. When Andy and Barney were your friends and they looked after you, they had your best interests at heart. They didn't put Otis the drunk. They didn't take him on a DWI charge. They just put him in the cell to sleep it off till the next day. They didn't try to squeeze him for the $10,000 in legal fees, plus the fines, plus suspension of your license and all that kind of stuff. They looked after you. They took care of their communities. And since we've got this Israeli influence in our law enforcement now, they're treating the American people the same way they treat the Palestinians. And quite frankly, I don't like being treated like a Palestinian, not in my own country anyway.
Yeah. Essentially, we have an occupation police force now. And that's kind of what they are, the occupiers, and we are the Palestinians. And that brings it back to JT Reddy again. When he ran for sheriff, he wanted to be a peace officer as opposed to a law enforcement officer, which, you know, is quite a bit different than what we have going on today. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who objected to that plank in his platform as well, because that's what he wanted to run on. Well, we want to be a peace officer. We don't want to keep this revolving door at our jail full all the time and people coming in and out constantly. We want to be a peace officer, which is not what our current plan is all about. It's about revenue generation, And it's also about controlling the populace with, well, fear.
No, there's a number of drivers here. There's a number of drivers, and you mentioned one. One is generating revenue. The other is providing the workforce for the prison industry. The other one is keeping the population afraid, keeping them constantly interbulated and fearful. And, you know, folks, this is no way to live. It's no way to live. And it's not going to change until we change it. Now, I don't know how to advise changing this because they've really got the deck stacked against us in most everywhere. I mean, just even talking about meaningful change might be enough to get you arrested.
Yeah, it could happen.
that's coming next. I mean, next it's going to be thought crimes. You're not going to be allowed to think certain things. You cannot. You won't be able to allow to express thoughts and feelings that you may have, whether they're right or wrong. You're not going to be allowed to. It's going to be a crime. It's going to be something to shut you up, and that's what they want. We are run by a group of paranoid psychopaths that need to be dealt with, and. Like I said, it's not mismanagement, it's malmanagement. And it has been since the murder of JFK. Things haven't gotten better since then. They've gotten worse. They got away with it. Nobody believed that Lee Harvey Oswald did it, but they kept sticking with the official story. Even when Jack Ruby, the terminal cancer patient, shot him and died 2 weeks later, they did everything they could do to make that story stick. And, we know now that's not what happened. We know now who the real shooters were. We know that George H.W. Bush was on the scene. We know Johnson was involved in the cover-up. We know all this. We figured it out. It took us a while because they destroyed as much evidence as quickly as they could, including murdering the suspect. And then his murderer died. You know, so how do you reverse that? You know, the same thing with 9/11, where the FBI comes in 9/11, and they dismantled and destroyed the crime scene as quickly as they could, kept everybody out of the crime scene, but they did away with anything, any residuals from 9/11. They got rid of as quickly as they could, and these are cover up, folks. There's no ifs, there's no ands, there's no buts. And they keep doing this stuff to us. And it's time that the American people got angry and threw all these rascals out and throw the bums out. There's no other way to do this. And, you know, I just got had a listener send me a note a little earlier about T. Boone Pickens. And I don't want to lump him in, but, you know, he's the legendary Texas oil man, made his billions in Texas oil, right? Last year he said that the price of oil is going to be up to, $75 a barrel by the end of 2015. Well, he was wrong on that. And then Monday of this week, he said, oil's at $26 a barrel. It's going to go up to $52 a barrel. It's going to double. And then it was from Zero Hedge came out, and they said that he sold all of his oil holdings. So the message here is, I think oil prices are going to get lower, not higher. I think that the oil cartel has, for lack of a better term, stepped on their own dick. Okay, they hurt themselves. It started with the Saudis when the Saudis were induced to drop prices in order to hurt the Russians. I wrote that position paper for Veterans Today a little over a year ago, or mid-January last year, and advising Putin that if he wanted to stop the Western aggression, you have to destroy the Western banks. You destroy the Western banks by dropping oil prices. And I look forward to the day when the Western banks, when the too big to fails, all collapse, because this derivative business is not been come home. They allowed themselves to skate by the January 15th reset on that. And they've been advised by government agencies not to mark to market, but to mark to book. So if your book value is this or that, then you keep your valuation of that. So they're actually telling the banks to commit fraud against the American people again. Okay. Anyway, like I said, it's time for a new banking system. It's time for all new elected politicians. It's time to get rid of these guys. These guys are turkey. I mean, I wouldn't let Mark Rubio mow my grass. Okay, I don't have any grass, but I wouldn't let him mow it if I did. These are just people who are unfit they're just absolutely unfit for any productive interaction with civilized people. They're just not there. They just don't have it. And I got a note here that says T. Boone Pickens is putting his money into water rights.
Lots of people are. That's big. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the new oil.
Well, the thing of it is, you know, if oil is tight, you can always, you know, get yourself a bicycle and get around. But you can't go for more than 3 days without water. I mean, that's kind of the whole issue there. And, you know, you just can't get by without it. So they're focusing on all of the essentials that we've for human life, everything we've taken for granted our whole lives, because you go over here, you turn on the spigot, and water comes out, and by golly, you can drink it. It's okay. And if you don't like it, you can run it through a filter or something, and it's okay. But you know, without that water, that tap goes off. And you know, I kind of look at this Flint, Michigan thing going on up there. I kind of look at that as sort of an experiment. That how are people in Flint, Michigan reacting to having, you know, unfit drinking water? Because I think whatever works in Flint is going to be imposed upon the rest of the country over the next, you know, 30 to 50 years. And so when, you know, we wake up, I'll be dead in 50 years probably. But, you know, 50 years from now, my kid's going to wake up and every ounce of water, every drop he's going to have to pay through the nose for and pay the same price as we're paying for gasoline today.
Could happen. I've been watching the water thing. I said, I live in the desert. I live in a small rural area, and we actually own our own water company. Our water isn't exactly fit to drink either. It's got high levels of arsenic and nitrates and things in it, but it's still wet. It's still clear. It doesn't smell like rotten eggs, so it passes for water. But this is something that our community actually owns, maintains, and operates. And, you know, everybody here pays about $60 a month for it. Places in nearby communities may pay more, even $100. But I see these municipal water companies in some of these cities are probably going to try to find some way to get out from under this burden. The infrastructure is old. It's failing. They're full of leaks. I see them trying to sell these to private interests. So I think these water supplies are ultimately going to become privatized at some point in time.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because you've just touched upon something. Because anytime you privatize something that the public has built and paid for, like a water treatment plant or the distribution pipes or anything along those lines, and you sell it to a private individual, that's theft of the commons. The people already own that, and these things should be off limits and should never be put up for sale under any circumstances. Look what happened in downtown Phoenix with the parking meters. Okay, remember that?
Oh yeah, they raised the prices again.
Well, the parking meters. The city comes out and says, you know, we've got all these parking meters here, and but we're just not making any money on this. We can't keep them up. We're going to sell the rights to all the parking in downtown Phoenix to a private company. And what would it went from like a quarter an hour to what, a buck and a half an hour? I mean, overnight. And why couldn't the city of Phoenix have done the same thing and made more money and dug themselves out of the pickle they put themselves in? And I'll tell you how mismanaged Arizona is under Governor Jan Brewer. And I like Jan, you know, I know her, nice woman. I like her, but boy, she was an awful governor. Under Governor Brewer, they sold the state capitol, and they leased it back.
Yeah, you know, now, amazing.
You know what? Wait a minute. Wait,
you
a minute.
Had it.
This was already owned. It was free and clear. What are you, stupid? You're selling the state capitol, and you want to lease it back? How is that going to save you any money? You could guess there's no ifs, ands, or buts. The fix was in. I mean, Jan Brewer, nice woman, not smart enough to realize she was being played and manipulated by private interests who wanted to fleece the state of Arizona. She just didn't have the skill set to figure it out. She just wasn't that smart. Or she was in on it.
Oh, there you go.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things. You know, somebody always comes out ahead on these things. I mean, you know, do we have Is that truly what the, what our political class has turned into?
I would think to a large degree, yes. Privatize. Well, she was also part of the private prison lobbyist. She was on the inside there too. So, you know, if you got friends or relatives in the right places, well, yeah, we'll just make you a deal. We'll privatize this and put you guys in charge of it, and we'll get something on the backside.
Yeah, and you know that kind of stuff ought to be illegal. You think a little conflict of interest here? Don't you have a fiduciary duty to the electorate to not do these kind of things, to not cheat the people out of what they already own and what they've already paid for with their hard-earned tax dollars?
Well,
anyway,
I think so, but no.
Well, the other thing that really gripes me, and this is something that I know you can relate to as well, Harry. When did Social Security become an entitlement?
I'm entitled to it because I paid for it.
No. Listen.
Yeah, I understand.
you paid for it. That's the key. We had money forcibly taken from us during our working careers to be put aside in government trust in order to be managed for us so we could get it back later when we have the comfort of our retirement. We won't be destitute in the street. And now they're lumping this as an entitlement. Now, entitlements, I think, are a little bit different. That kind of is the welfare programs, the EBT cards, the Section 8 housing, the cash programs, welfare benefits. Those are entitlements. And you know, we're going on our third, fourth generation of what I call the permanent underclass. It's both black and white. That have never worked a day in their life, never going to work a day in their life. Their kids aren't going to work a day in their life. And that's an entitlement. And they feel they're entitled to it. That's the thing that kills me. Why are you entitled to this? Why are you entitled to take some hardworking guy's money so you can live and be a non-productive parasite on society? I don't want to see anybody starve in the street. I don't. I want to see people have access to things when they have true emergencies. So, my proposal on that has always been, say, let's limit the lifetime welfare benefit 5 years, make it 10 years, a decade, a full decade, that if you need to collect welfare benefits for a decade because of, bad circumstances, you lost your job, your factory got shut down and moved away, fine. We'll give it to you for 10 years, but not your whole life. And we're not going to give it to your kids and your grandkids either. Enough's enough. 10 years and out. That's how I look at the situation here. So,
we can't do it forever. And that's the problem. We're doing it forever, and it's bad enough that we're handing these things out to our own people, but we have to import 1.2 to 1.5 million more other people into this country to put them on the dole for the rest of their lives as well.
And that's the other thing that goes hand in hand with that, is that we have all these immigrants, legal and illegal, who as soon as they get here, they've contributed nothing to nobody. And they're immediately on the government tit, immediately. And Harry, in Arizona, I used to see this all the time. I'd see a Hispanic family, didn't speak a word of English, not a word, driving a brand new Escalade with, five, six kids in it, mom and dad, maybe two or three women, five or six kids, and one man driving. And I'd see it all the time, time and again, brand new Escalade, what I drive here. I'm still driving that old 93 Dodge. And it's paid for, It's paid for. So that's why I drive it. And, it's just not bad. It'll pull anything just about. It's a pretty stout truck. But I'm not driving a brand new rig. They are, because they're cheating the system. They'll go down there to the welfare office. And let's say they have three kids. They'll borrow three of the neighbor's kids and go down there with six and get the welfare benefits for seven people because mother's a single mom. Meanwhile, dad's living in the house and he's working a job under the table for cash. So, and then mom's also working outside the house. She's got a job as a maid, but none of that income gets reported. And all they do is take. And you wonder why they're living large and driving a new Escalade? That's why. That's how it works. And Harry, you know, am I alone in my observation, or have you seen the same things?
Oh, I see it all the time. And not only do they have a nice SUV, they got $2,000 and $3,000 and $4,000 sets of rims on them too, so they could drive around, you know, and they seem to have a lot of money to go out and have fun with and entertain and have parties of live bands. I could hear them 2 miles down the street. And they even have guys that just come across the border. They stop them 3 weeks after they come across the border. They're driving a brand new ride too. So I don't know. I must be doing something wrong. Even when I worked off, you know, 12, 14 hours a day, I was still driving a, you know, a used vehicle with quite a few miles on it. Of course, I didn't have 10 extra people in my home who paid me $35 a week to sleep on the floor either. We have a lot of property managers out there too who work off the books because they have cousins and relatives and things that seem to have $35 to sleep on the floor. And if you want to go to the bathroom at night, you got to step over people and hope you don't trip. But that happens out here all the time too. We'll have 30 people living in one home.
Yeah, that's a little overcrowded, and I think it's against the zoning code to how many occupants can be in a home. But that never seems to get enforced. But yet, yeah. whenever I parked my 1977 travel trailer in your backyard for over a month, you got a notice from the county.
Yes, very prompt.
that I had to vacate the premises.
You know, it's funny you mention that because if I look out my window over next door, they got some kind of, looks like about a 32-footer with slide-outs on it sitting over there. I haven't seen any lights on it yet, but they're working on it. So I'd put even money on it. Someone's going to move in there rather quickly.
in the RV?
Yeah. I think, well, they got people living in the garage, and I'm not sure how many are over there, but I think they're creating some more living space. And the county has also recently amended that zoning ordinance, and I think they made it even stricter because we already have, you know, the Canadians that come down here. There's quite a few travel trailers around my neighborhood right now, and I don't see anybody getting, you know, notices or warnings or any kind of.
Well, they sure came after you and me real quick.
No time. No.
we got our next break coming up. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes more with Harry Hughes right after this. Stick with us, folks. Well, good evening and welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, as well as www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Thursday, February 4th, 2016, and my guest is my friend, Harry Hughes. Harry, welcome back. And I got a note here from an email from one of our listeners saying, if the king rents his castle, is he really the king or a figurehead? If the state doesn't own its capital, how can it be a sovereign state?
It's a good question. Excellent, good question. Actually.
It is. It truly is. This comes down to the nuts and bolts. And what we're seeing here, folks, is that we're seeing the takeover of public properties, the commons that all of us own. All of us own these things. I mean, I own a piece of the Capitol. Harry owns a piece of the Capitol. Every citizen of the state owns a piece of that Capitol. But yet, these very few decided to sell it to a private party and lease it back to us. None of us consented to this, and it's time that we started to withdraw our consent for such bad and what I will call feckless governance.
Yeah, it goes beyond just selling out state property too. We also are paying taxes to construct, well, sports stadiums to financially enrich, you know. Professional sports teams on the back of the taxpayer who may never very well see a game there or purchase an $8 cup of beer. So, you know, it goes beyond just selling and leasing our commons, but they're also fleecing us to enrich other corporations that we may not want to do so with. We don't seem to have a choice.
No, we don't. I mean, Arizona, when they brought the Cardinals down from St. Louis, they stole them from St. Louis and enticed the ownership of the team to bring the Cardinals down to the football team down to Arizona. They made these big promises of building the stadium. And by golly, they delivered. They delivered a billion-dollar stadium that's paid for by the citizens of Arizona. So St. Louis went and recruited the Los Angeles Rams to come to St. Louis. They built them a new stadium there. And now the St. Louis Rams are now leaving St. Louis to go back to Los Angeles because Los Angeles has promised them a billion-dollar publicly paid-for stadium. If we really believe in the concept of private enterprise, then why don't these teams – how come they can't fund their own stadiums? I mean, NFL's big business, folks. I mean, it's big business. I mean, franchises are selling for in excess of up to $1 billion right now for a franchise, if you can buy one. So this is big business. Why do they need to squeeze the taxpayers to subsidize them? You know, because we're a bunch of stupid fans who don't care. I mean, build it into the ticket price. Tickets are outrageously priced anyway. Build it into the television revenue. I mean, come on, there's a multitude of revenue streams out there that these owners should be able to fund their own stadiums. But yet they hire lobbyists who go out and court the politicians, wine and dine them. You know, who knows what other kind of grease they're giving them. But they get these politicians to vote against the citizens and for the profit of the team and its ownership. It just doesn't make sense to me. So... Anyway, so who you like in the Super Bowl, Harry? Speaking of
football, I don't even know who's playing in it.
It's the Carolina Panthers and the Denver Broncos.
I wouldn't have a clue, but last year's Super Bowl just happened to have been in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And I had a journalist down here I was out in the desert with, and like in the middle of the photo shoot, you know, he cuts it off. He's got to go to Glendale, to the stadium, and follow Immigration Customs Enforcement around so they can go out and hunt people down who were selling fake NFL clothing. And not only did Immigration Customs Enforcement pull agents off of Immigration and Customs, and they also pulled Black Hawk helicopters off the line and took them to Glendale. So it became pretty clear to me that the financial interests of the NFL trumped our border security down here in Arizona. And of course, you know, it was just it's one thing after another. The National Football League should police their own ranks and round up their own shirt counterfeiters or something, but let's leave the immigration guys out of this.
It doesn't seem to have anything to do with it. I understand copyright and patent infringement, all that kind of stuff. I get it. You know, I know what they're talking about there, but if they're not willing to foot the bill for that enforcement, why should the public pay to do that? Why should the public pay to protect the NFL's brand? Does that make sense? It doesn't make any sense to me at all. I mean,
it doesn't. No.
No, I mean, it's an interesting conundrum we're in here, but where the NFL can get public resources to protect their brand. I mean, no one's being hurt. It's a victimless crime. The NFL is the victim here, I guess, but it's shocking to me that they would actually do that. But I'll take your word; I'm sure they did.
Well, it just amazes me because it's like, you know, they make such a big deal out of this one game, and the whole idea is to suck people in so they'll throw money away on this stuff, and maybe they wouldn't charge so much for those jerseys in the first place, they wouldn't be sneaking them in here from China or. They do this every city they go to, every city. And the net loss for the actual municipal, you know, with this added security, the police protection, the cities usually operate at a loss. Yes, yeah, some businesses profit from it. The food vendor will make money. Police will get overtime, which will affect the city's budget then.
Oh, the hotels and restaurants do great. I mean,
yeah, they all do great.
They all do great, but nobody else does. Everybody else has got to pay for it. We all get stuck with the tab.
The taxpayer doesn't do so well.
Well, the thing that kills me is that they keep talking about this terrorism. We've got to have all this security to stop terrorism. There isn't any terrorism, folks. 9/11 was a false flag. It wasn't a terrorist event. It was a staged event to make us think that there was terrorism. These fusion sitters have come up with nothing. There are no domestic terrorists. There aren't any. You know, it's a joke. It's a lie. ISIS is a creation created by the CIA, created by the government of Turkey, created by the government of Israel, created by the government of Saudi Arabia to go out and take over and redraw the lines on the map so Syria doesn't exist anymore. That's what ISIS is there for. They're there to steal oil. They're there to steal artifacts. That's what they're doing. Terrorism doesn't exist. It's plain criminality. And, you know, the thing is, I kind of switch subjects here because I talk about domestic terrorism, but it's the same everywhere you go. There aren't any terrorists. There are criminals. Some are hiding behind the facade of religious extremism, and they're saying that's why they're terrorists. They're not terrorists. They're criminals. It's a different set, and it's no different than what the Bolsheviks did in Russia. What the Bolsheviks did in Russia under the guise of a political disagreement, they went in and killed 100 million people, stole all their stuff, and made off with it. That's what they did. Now, what are they doing in Syria? They're going in, they're killing millions of people, they're stealing their stuff, and they're making off with it. Only they said it was political back in the Bolshevik time, and the same Bolsheviks, their grandsons, their granddaughters are doing the same thing to different people in a different part of the world, but it's the same business model. And once you understand that, then you understand what terrorism is. Terrorism is the big banks are in trouble. They can't afford it. They're using the profit from the theft of Syrian and Iraqi oil to offset their losses on the derivatives. And that's the only thing that's keeping them alive right now. That's it. That's it in a nutshell. I can't make it any plainer, any simpler, but that's what's going on in this world. And so I digress. I got us off of the Super Bowl and NFL. <I'm
sorry>. Good, actually.
Oh, shoot. Well, I'm understanding that we're in the early stages of organizing another trip back to Syria, the VT team is. And I would certainly like to go, be included. This will be my third if I get to go. But, you know, we're trying to do good over there in that part of the world and trying to end this nonsense. And I think one of the things we have to do is expose those in our country who are responsible for this. And, you know, it's, you know, Gordon Duff came out a while back and said that, you know, the largest, the ones who are buying the stolen oil from Iraq and Syria, the biggest buyers are BP and Exxon Mobil. And, you know, that's, as far as I know, that is true. All oil has its own unique chemical signature. If you took a sample of West Texas Intermediate and compared it to North Sea Brent crude, you would see that they are different. If you took a sample of Syrian oil and compared it to either of those, you would see it is different. They have unique chemical signatures. And you know what? The guys who are buying this stolen oil, they absolutely know it, and they know what they're doing. And they're. It just tells you how pervasive this web of organized crime is. It's global. It's absolutely global. This is global organized crime, and it's to quote Jeff Gates, it's transgenerational, transnational organized crime, and it goes on because, you know, one of the discussions I had with the Minister of Justice was that how is the oil getting from the wellhead to the refinery? It's not walking, and, you know, it doesn't do that. There's no pipelines. So you're going to have to look for the source interdicted. It's either getting there by truck or it's getting there by very large crude carrier. And we had this discussion with him and says they're committing piracy against your country. The rules of piracy are over 400 years old. They're enforceable everywhere. You have the right as a Syrian government to interdict and seize any vessels that are transporting your stolen property. And so the Russians came in and started bombing the hell out of these oil tankers coming and going into Turkey. And the Russians are pretty smart. I got to admire them so much. I mean, Vladimir Putin is like my hero because they're smart. They're not bombing them on the way out. because of the ecological damage it would cause. They're bombing the trucks on the way in when they're coming in empty with your deadhead loads. There's nothing there. So they're not creating an environmental hazard for the Syrian people, which I think is extremely admirable. But I have yet to see either the Russians or the Syrians seize a ship on the oceans. I'd like to see that. I really would, because not only is it does oil not move itself, you know, it has to be moved. Not only are they aiding and abetting and committing acts of terrorism by their actions, but so is the refinery that buys it. So by that, you can conclude that both BP and ExxonMobil are supporting terrorism, that they are providing material support to terrorism. Any bank that clears any of the transactions where they buy a tanker full of oil, that bank, how is ISIS getting paid? How are they getting their money back? Some banks clearing their account. Some banks get them access to their money. That's how it is. And I bring this up because I want people to truly understand the magnitude, the size, the breadth of this global organized crime that's going on. And this is what it's about. This is the work we're trying to do in Syria, is to help break the back of these criminals and trying to expose them, break them. So anyway, that's my other rant, my other soapbox there. And I just got something sent to me by another listener saying, surprise, surprise, Oregon State Police who killed Levon Finnegan were trained by the Israelis.
Of course.
Shoot
first, ask questions later. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, folks, welcome to New Palestine. I could tell you a joke. It's funny. This old Texas boy, he goes into church, and he sits through the service, and the minister after the church service says, "Oh, by golly, I'm surprised you're here. You never come to church before. You don't know anything about anything. You couldn't even tell me where Jesus was born." And the old Texan says, "Well, yeah, I could. Jesus was born in Beaumont." The minister looks and goes, "No, Jesus was not born in Beaumont. What's wrong?" He goes, "No, go give me another chance." Old Texan says, no, Jesus must have been born in Nacogdoches. The minister goes, no, Jesus was born in Palestine. The old Texas rancher says, "By golly, I knew it was one of those East Texas towns." There you go. It's a subtle joke. It's a subtle joke. Anyway, that's it. But you know, it is what we have to do is look at what's going on. We have to take control. We've allowed this Khazarian mafia, and I'll call it for what it is. It's Khazarian mafia. They're the ones who run Israel. They're the ones who run the city of London. They're the ones who run the United States. And we've got to get rid of them. They have to go. They have to leave. So, anyway, when I talk about Khazarian mafia, you know what I mean. Those are the Ashkenazi brand of Jews who are false Jews. They were never Hebrews. They don't have any right to the land in the Middle East. They came from the area around what we call Ukraine now. And if you'll notice, there's been a little trouble in Ukraine the last couple of years when the Bolsheviks, the grandsons and granddaughters, Victoria Nuland, spent $5 billion U.S. taxpayer dollars to unseat a duly elected president in Ukraine who is of Russian descent. And, Preston James and I write about this a lot, that, you know, these are the same people. It's the same clan, the same tribe. They come back time and again, and this is what they do for a living: is they murder people and steal their stuff. That's what their only known function is. Anyway, Harry, what else you got? We got a little less than 10 minutes.
Well, that was pretty interesting. And yeah, you're right. It's about looting. Either they wrap yourself in the flag of patriotism or religious ideologies, and that's who they recruit for their foot soldiers. But you know, you're right. You put the light on them and expose them. And that's the first step. And then if we can get people to pull their attention away from the Super Bowl and whatever else long enough to pay attention, and then it's time. We need some outrage.
Well, you know, I mean, in defense of the Super Bowl, come on, I'm a football fan. I like to watch it. I like college ball better than I like pro ball. But you know what? I enjoy watching football. It's kind of fun. You got a team. You root. You cheer. You know, you boo when they make a bad move. You're happy when they score a touchdown. Nothing wrong with this. This is as all American as can be. But you can't make it the center of your universe. And you've got civic responsibilities, not just to yourself and your family, but to your future generations and to your neighbors and to your friends, to not let these guys do this stuff, not let them sell the state capital of Arizona and lease it back, not let them sell every parking meter in downtown Phoenix and lease it back, you know, not let them sell the local water company and lease it back. These are things that we owe these are the commons. This is the theft of the commons. And once you understand what's going on, that they're not paying a true value for what these things are worth, and that these things are already owned and paid for. And if the state or the city or the federal government can't make money at it, maybe we need new management. And if they can't – and first of all, the state's not supposed to be a profit-generating entity. It's supposed to do things that people cannot do for themselves individually, but to do things that people must have help to do collectively. That's what the role of government ideally is. And our government has been hijacked, and I tell you, it's the Khazarian Mafia time and time again. Just look at the money. Look at who pays for the campaign, these politicians, the midgets. That's the other thing about Donald Trump I like. The fact that he's paying out of his own pocket to do this impresses the heck out of me. That's how I paid for my governor campaign. It was out of my own pocket. I didn't take a dime.
Yeah, that impresses me too, because you know, he's got his own airplane. He has his own – well, he can win a debate without showing up. And you know, I just kind of like the way he's been operating. You know, I'm not sure what kind of a president he'll make simply because the – he's still got to deal with Congress now.
Well, Congress is part of the trouble, Harry.
Right.
But even if we had a whole new Congress, we still got this bureaucracy that's been doing things the way they want to do them for a long time. And these bureaucrats aren't elected. They just do things the way they want to. And so, you know, it's going to be a bigger job. I mean, what's the old saying? Pity the reformer. You know, that's No, really, because they're going to have all these vested interests going to be pushing back on them.
Yeah, the bureaucrats write it up and they shove the paper under the nose and it just gets a rubber stamp. And that's what we've been doing.
You know? Well, a lot of these days, you know, private corporations have been writing the bills, you know, that these are not written by even congressional staffers. They're given to congressional staffers, and then they're forced through. And this is what the power of money does. I mean, you know, I look at the disasters that NAFTA and GATT and all these other free trade agreements have been, and now I look at these guys entertaining this TTIP, this Trans-Pacific Partnership thing. This stuff scares the heck out of me. I mean, haven't we learned that these have been unmitigated disasters? I mean, NAFTA hurt this country. It hurt the working people in this country. I mean, you know, you wonder why there's no recovery? Because there's no jobs left here. They all went to China and Mexico. And, you know, this stuff just – it offends me to such a degree. And yet, like most everybody else out there, because I don't have billions of dollars and I don't have the ability to buy influence, I just have, you know, this radio show with my own opinions – that I don't have much influence. And I'm lucky I have the radio show, can reach out to the tens and hundreds of thousands of people who watch and listen at all. I mean, this is a gift to have this microphone, to be able to have these dialogues, you know, to not be as powerless as the guy who doesn't have access to it.
Well, you're right. Most people don't have a voice at all. They're not heard, you know, and even in the – even when they think they have a voice, it's stifled at every turn, every twist. You know, you try to open your mouth, and then they hit you with something else, and Yeah, it's essentially what we have. You know, we've got a control mechanism in place where we don't have any say at all. And you know, even if you do have a platform, you know, there's always somebody else sitting there trying to knock you off.
Well, it's time to withdraw consent. It's time to stop consenting to being treated the way we allow ourselves to be treated. You know, it's kind of that thing if you're in a relationship and your partner, your spouse, whatever, is good to you or bad to you. If they're bad to you and you put up with it, they're going to keep being bad to you. And so, you know, it's a kind of up to you as to how you're treated. And so we allow ourselves to be walked on as an American people. And it's not good. It's bad for us. And it's going to continue until we don't allow it, until we say, no, we've had enough, and we quit. Like I said, withdraw consent. And you know, that it's a major, major thing to not go along with it. So, and I'll tell you what else. The Super Bowl, everybody talks about the Super Bowl commercials. Oh, please stop it. I mean, they try to out-cute themselves every year. I'm so tired of being marketed to. I know what I want. I know what I need. You know, some stupid glitzy commercial that is ha-ha funny is not going to make me buy something I don't want.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, I like to have a little bit of self-respect, a little bit of self-determination that I'm not going to because the commercial is so cute, I'm going to go out and buy Budweiser now.
You know? Yeah.
I can't stand Budweiser.
Well, I don't think I've ever purchased anything that was on a Super Bowl commercial ever. And I do watch them. In fact, I will be watching on Sunday when I'm not busy stuffing my face. So I will be checking out the commercials, but I don't really care for them. You know, again, I don't like commercials that much. And I think the best one I think they ever had on a Super Bowl commercial was the Paul Harvey ones that they've done in the past.
I don't recall them. And you know what? They're nothing that sticks with me. They're nothing that I don't waste active memory in my brain remembering them. I could care less. You know, just don't care. It's one of these things that just, you know, become apathetic to them and withdraw your consent. You know, the whole thing, our whole form of government is built upon these people are elected with the consent of the governed. Withdraw your consent. Don't be governed anymore, not by these clowns. So, anyway. I've got time for another joke if you want to hear one.
Okay.
All right, I got a joke. This is a bad joke, folks. I have to warn you all out there. This is a terrible joke.
But
it's funny. It's funny. Okay, what three words do you never, ever, ever want to hear when you're in bed having sex, making love?
I ready don't for this? Know.
You ready for this? Honey, I'm home.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that. No, that would be, looking for your pants, looking for the window and way out, and hope you don't have a gun.
There you go. It's corny, but it's kind of funny. It's a little off color, but it's not too bad. It's not a bad graphic joke. But it's just sort of amusing. Anyway, Harry, we're running out of time. We're going to be up here in about 30 seconds. I just want to say thanks for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on. And, you know, I really think we can't afford to let the JT murder rest. You know, one of these days, hopefully I'll have enough cash coming in. I'll actually be able to order a copy of the full coroner's report. Because if you recall, he had a .32 slug in his brain that he allegedly shot himself with. And, you know, you and I knew, you know, JT for years. I never knew of him owning a .32 caliber. So I'd like to see what the full autopsy results say. And they never did a gunshot residue test for his hands either. Interesting, huh?
I thought the whole report was highly flawed. It was not scientific in any way. There was no weights, measurements, or sizes of any of the fragments that they extracted. It was... I think it was a whole whitewash sort of thing. We'll just put report through and that's it. You know.
The educated guess is that it was done by the Gilbert police at the request of the cartels. That's what we think. Harry, have a good evening and take care. We'll talk again soon, brother.
All right. Good night.
Be well. Bye-bye.